welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode number 9 of the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you're joining me today for this episode, thank you very much. I appreciate that you've taken the time to download the file and that you're taking the time to listen. It's my hope that through listening to my advice and my answers to questions here on the podcast, that you too can improve your tennis. I want you to get better at the game that you enjoy, at the sport that you enjoy. And this is one way that you can do that, through getting good advice and trying to implement that in your game. You can improve. So thanks very much for joining me today. Before we get started with the questions, just a couple of quick things here. Firstly, I just wanted to say that as the podcast continues to get more popular and as more and more people start downloading it and listening to it, it's very, very exciting for me to hear back from the people who are listening, because the fact is people are improving their tennis through listening to the Essential Tennis Podcast. And that's really cool for me to hear back from people who I'm giving answers to and who I'm trying to help. It's just awesome to hear back from people who are going and using my advice and coming back and seeing results. People are actually improving their game through listening to a podcast. And I think that's just excellent. It's a lot of fun for me to help out. And it's very rewarding to hear back from those of you who I'm actually helping out. And through all the questions from everybody who's listening, we can all get better as a community and as a team together. As you guys continue to ask questions, they relate to other people who may have the same problem, other people who are experiencing the same difficulties, and as a group, we can continue to improve. So it's really cool to hear back from everybody. Thank you, everybody who's taken the time to write in this week. It's great to hear back from everybody, and keep up the good work. Everybody who's out there practicing and working hard to get better, it's paying off. So nice job. Also, make sure you guys go and visit EssentialTennis.com this week. I have the blog there, as well as the podcast, the archives for both. So you can find articles there, and you can download previous episodes of the Essential Tennis Podcast. And I'm working hard on getting more content as well. As that continues to grow, it's my hope that it gets bigger and better, and I'm going to try to cover more topics and in a variety of ways. In the near future, I hope to have video content up as well. And also in the very, very near future, we're going to have an equipment expert who's going to be writing articles on a weekly basis as well. So I'm going to do my best to try to cover everything I can that pertains to tennis. And I want it to be a resource for you guys to go and read and listen and watch and try to improve your game in one place. That's my goal for the website. Lastly, thank you to everybody who has gone to iTunes, to the music store, and left comments there and feedback. I really appreciate it. Last week when I recorded episode number 8, I said that I would love to get 10 comments by the end of the week, because the number one tennis podcast at that time had 9. Well, right now we're up to 6, which is awesome. We've had 5 new comments left in the last week, and the podcast has gone from number 8 or number 9 overall for a search of tennis podcast to now up to number 4. So the Essential Tennis Podcast is growing. Again, this week, anybody who has the time to head on over to the iTunes music store and leave a comment, I would really appreciate that. I want it to keep on growing, and the comments help boost the ratings and drive more people to the podcast. So if you have a couple minutes and could head on over there and leave me a comment for the podcast, I'd really appreciate it. Thanks very much again to everybody who has already done that. It's great to hear feedback from you guys, and especially those of you who the podcast has helped your game. Again, it's just great to hear back from you and see that it's actually making a difference out there. Okay, let's go ahead and get to our first question here on episode number 9. Our first question today comes from Steve, and he has a question about volleys. He says, Ian, I took your advice on the volley this weekend. I hit with a guy that is a level above me, and when I approach the net, he usually gives me one of his wicked slice backhands. I kept the continental grip for my backhand volley and had pretty good results when he gave me this shot several times. Thanks for the advice. I have another question concerning high volleys. I find myself dumping a lot of them into the net lately. I am sure that it is a combination of inexperience and poor technique. I feel like I am probably being too wristy on these shots, but perhaps you could cover the proper technique for the high volley, especially the backhand. I promise I am using the continental grip on these. All right, Steve, good question. First of all, good job already switching to the continental grip, and it's great to hear that you're already getting used to it. That will continue to pay off in the long run, like we talked about last week, because it will be more consistent for your forehand and backhand volley. It's easier to be prepared as you get close to the net and you have less time. It's important to be ready for both sides. So it's great that you've gone ahead and made that change. Now let's talk about high volleys. Once you get to the net, the whole goal of getting up there is to rush your opponent, to take time away from them, to put pressure on them, and also to gain positional advantage over them. Because the closer you get to the net, the more angles you have available to you, and the more of your opponent's side of the court you're able to see. And so it's a better place to be to try to put the ball away. You're not as far away from their side. And so you have an advantage as far as your position is concerned. Now, for a high volley, basically, the closer you get to the net and the higher you're making contact with the volley, the more closed your racket face should be. As you close closer and closer to the net, your racket face should close a little bit more, all other things being equal. When you're back on the service line or behind the service line, you have to make sure that you're making contact with your volleys with an open racket face, because the ball has to come up off your racket to make it over the top of the net. If you're of average height, of any height really, and you stand on the service line and look at your opponent's side, I'm about 6 feet tall. If I stand on the service line and look to the other side, I can see over the top of the net about to no man's land on my opponent's side. And so if I'm trying to hit anything but no man's land or back, which is about 10 feet of space or so, my racket face has to be open, because the ball has to get over the top of the net and then land back in the opponent's side in order to make the shot. So you can't close the face, or else you're going to hit the net. If you try to hit directly at your opponent's side from the service line, unless it's an overhead and you're reaching well above your head, you're going to end up hitting the net if your racket face is closed. And so as far as technique is concerned, Steve, it's very important not to use your hand or your wrist a lot to power this shot. And unless you're extremely close to the net and the ball is being hit from well above the height of the net, we cannot get away with moving our hand around a lot. And the reason for that is, as you move your hand and your wrist, the angle of the racket face changes. And so if you move your hand at the ball, and you swing at the ball with your hand and wrist on a volley, for each individual place that your racket is facing during that swing, which is a lot if you're using your hand, as the racket turns and the face is angling towards different directions, those are all different parts of the court you could be hitting to depending on when you make contact. And so your timing has to be perfect if you want to hit your target. So the best way to hit an aggressive volley but still put it in play is to close the face accordingly, depending on how close you are and depending on how high the ball is, and keep your racket face consistent as possible. So we want to get most of the strength for the shot from our core and from our shoulder, rotating forwards, trying to keep the racket face relatively consistent as we make contact. If you try to accelerate the racket by using your hand and your wrist and your forearm, then the racket face is going to be making big changes. And if your timing isn't perfect, the ball is going to go flying in all different directions. You're going to have very little control and very little consistency. And that's most likely why you're dumping these shots into the net. And I would wager if you're having trouble with the high volley, they're probably going in a vast array of different places, if in fact the cause is from using too much hand or too much wrist. So depending on where you are in the court, depending on how high the ball is and how close you are, you can close your face to a varying degree, depending on the angle you have to work with. As you step inside the service line, two, three, four steps, you can see more and more of your opponent's side of the court, and so you can then start to close your face a little bit more and be a little more aggressive in terms of the racket face. You don't have to have it as open as you get closer to their side. Just keep in mind, keep your hand, your wrist nice and relaxed, a little bit of firmness when you make contact, but you should be using your core. You should be making a turn to prepare for the shot and turning forwards into contact, using your core and using your shoulder to move the racket towards your target in a direct hit. You're not trying to swing the racket back and forth, making big changes in the racket face. You're trying to keep the racket face facing the target as long as possible. So keep the racket at this about the same angle and use your body and your core to hit forwards into the shot. As you get more advanced, you can start to get away with a little more using your hand and your wrist, but I would almost hesitate to even say that at all. I'm about a 5.0 player. I just actually played doubles a couple days ago, and I love the net. I love volleys. I very rarely break the angle of the racket or the angle with my wrist and my hand as I make contact. Certainly from the service line or behind, you should be keeping the angle of the racket face pretty consistent as you make contact, pretty much at any level, even on a higher shot that you're being a little more aggressive with. So Steve, hopefully that answers your question. Again, as your level raises and as you get a better feel for where exactly you are and how much you can get away with in terms of being aggressive, you can start to add a little bit more here and there, using your hand to accelerate the racket further. But for right now, I would definitely think of your volleys as trying to place the ball, trying to use the angles available to you by getting close to the net. Keep the racket face consistent and use your body. Hopefully that answers your question. Definitely write me back if you have anything further on that. Thanks very much for taking the time to write that question. Okay, on to our second question today. This next question got me really excited because it's the first question that I've received from another country outside of the U.S. It's really cool to see that people all around the world are starting to download the podcast, and this is the first actual question I've received from somebody outside of the U.S., which is really cool. This question comes from Sebastian, and he is in Buenos Aires, Argentina. He writes and says, "Hi, Ian. I'm 30 years old and just started playing about 8 months ago because of my social life. Where I am, tennis is one of the only ways to have a social life, and that's why I started. I'm not bad at sports, but I find tennis to be one of the hardest sports I've ever played. The reason I'm emailing you is because I have two problems, and one of them is I don't know what to do with my footwork. I've heard in one of your podcasts where you were answering a question and said that footwork could be one of the problems while you are too far or too close to the ball when hitting the ball. Well, that doesn't happen when the ball comes to me, but the problem occurs when I have to run towards the ball or I'm actually moving around to get the ball." And then he says at the end also, "I think your podcast is awesome. It helps my game. I can't get enough of it. I really hope it keeps growing. And truly, you've been much more help than my tennis professor, and he charges much more than you do." Well, Sebastian, thanks very much. I appreciate your feedback, and I appreciate you taking the time to write a question. It's really cool, again, to hear from somebody outside the U.S., from another country, and really encouraging to me that the podcast has grown that much. It was really exciting to get your email. Well, yes, By the way, I left out Sebastian's second question. He had a question about his backhand as well, and it was kind of a vague question. I wrote him back and asked him to clarify a little more, and I haven't heard back from him yet, so I'll just go ahead and answer his question about footwork. Footwork, guys, is extremely, extremely important. In tennis, you don't have the luxury of making contact with the ball in the same place every time unless you do a lot of work with your feet. And this footwork is called positioning. You're trying to position yourself in relation to the ball as close to the same place as possible, as consistently as possible. That's the whole goal of moving your feet, is trying to make contact in about the same spot every time. Definitely that applies more so to ground strokes or to overheads, where the ball is being hit to you, and you have the time to react to the ball and position yourself in a way that is good for you, in a way that's going to put your body in balance where you can make a good shot. When you hit volleys, you don't have as much say over your position because you have a lot less time. And so it pertains more to ground strokes where the ball is bouncing and you have the time to react to it. And as I said initially, the whole point of footwork is to get yourself in a comfortable position as often as possible. And comfortable position basically means wherever you can make the actual swing that you're talking about, whether it's a forehand ground stroke, a backhand ground stroke, we need to find the place that's most easy for you to make your swing at the ball. I usually refer to this in my lessons as a player's strike zone. In baseball, there's a strike zone, a place where you should be able to hit the ball, and that's some place between your knees and about your chest, usually about waist high, and a comfortable distance away from your body. So your arm should not be stretched out all the way when you're making contact. You also don't want to be jammed up and having your arm in real close to your body, and you don't have enough room to make a comfortable swing. We want to have a comfortable distance away from the body, and we want the ball to be waist height. Should be about the height of your waist. And so your job, after the ball has been hit to you, Sebastian, is to move your body so that when you make contact with the ball, during the time of the swing, when you make contact, we want the ball to be at your waist. And so if the ball is hit high and it's coming deep to you in the court, you're going to have to back up. Because if you stay in the same spot, if you're on the baseline and the ball is hit deeply to you and high and it bounces up high, you're going to be making contact too high over your shoulder or even over your head, and it's not going to be easy to hit a good quality shot. Conversely to that, if the ball is hit low over the net or if it's hit softly and you stay in the same spot, by the time the ball gets to you, or it may not even get to you, if it ends up being lower than your waist, it's also not going to be easy to hit a good quality shot. So when the ball comes low over the net, you're going to have to move forwards. And if it's to the right or to the left, you're going to have to move accordingly to try to get the ball in your strike zone, waist high, in a comfortable distance from your body. As I teach beginners, some people have an easy time with this. Some people I don't even have to talk to them about this, and they just kind of get it. They're like, okay, well, it's easy to hit the ball here, and so when the ball starts coming towards me, I got to move my feet, and that's where the ball is going to have to be if I want to hit a good shot. Other players have a hard time judging where the ball is going to end up. And so they kind of make a guess. They see in general it's in this direction or that direction, or maybe it's deep or it's short. They make a couple of steps, but they're not quite sure. And by the time the ball gets to them, they find out they were wrong. And they end up getting rushed, and the ball is in an uncomfortable place, and they have to make an off-balance swing. And so some people are going to have to practice this more than others. And it's a matter of experience, and it's a matter of putting the time in, of seeing a lot of balls come your way before you know right away, all right, that ball is to my right, and it's coming high and fast, so it's going to be deep. I'm going to have to move back into my right so that the ball is at my waist when I make contact. All I can tell you, Sebastian, is it takes more time for some people than others. So if you find yourself hitting in an uncomfortable place over and over, you're going to have to get out there and practice. And consciously, when the ball is hit, as soon as it's hit from your opponent, you need to immediately start analyzing, where is the ball going to be? And your feet have to start moving right away. If you sit there and think about it and watch it, you're going to run out of time. So start moving right away. And if you were wrong, if the ball was in a different place than where you thought it was going, then just make a note of it. And hopefully the next time that kind of shot is hit, you can move to the right place. The last thing I would say, Sebastian, on ground strokes for sure, on a forehand or a backhand ground stroke, you should be trying to make contact with the ball on its way down from the bounce. And let me clarify that. When the ball is hit to your side of the court, it bounces on your side. After the bounce, it's coming up into the air, and usually it's going to bounce higher than waist height. And unless the ball was hit very low or very softly, it's going to come up above waist height after it bounces. Generally speaking, it's easiest to make contact with the ball on its way down from the bounce. So you want to position yourself so that the ball can bounce, it can come up to the top of its the peak of its bounce, and then on its way down again, when the ball crosses waist height for you, that's when you want to make contact. So try to position yourself on your ground strokes so that on its way down after its bounce, you're making contact at your waist. That is your goal for your positioning from the baseline. Hopefully that helps you out. But definitely write me back and let me know how it goes. And hopefully that can help you improve. And also on your backhand ground stroke, if you want me to help you out with that as well, just answer the email I sent to you. I asked you a couple questions about that. But thanks for being a listener, and thank you very much for writing that question. All right, next up we have two questions in from Kent. Kent's first question is about teaching his young son and how to get him involved in tennis. He says, "My five-year-old is really interested in tennis now. After watching some tournaments with me on TV and playing Wii Sports Tennis, he wants to actually play. I bought him a Wilson racket for his age group, and we hit the court once a week or so and just kind of hit it around. He makes decent contact and has lots of fun. Other than trying to get him to swing smoothly, is there anything at his age level I should focus on?" Well, that's a good question, Kent. I actually, once a week, I run a clinic, two clinics actually, at the club where I teach full-time for that age group, 4 to 7-year-olds. And it can be a lot of fun. The kids at that age can be hilarious. And it's really cool to see some of them improve. And it's easy to tell right away which kids are going to be able to pick the sport up quickly and which it's going to take some time or maybe wait till they get a little bit older and grow into their bodies a little more and gain a little bit more coordination. But anyway, I wrote a couple of things down here that you should keep in mind as you go out and continue to practice with them. First of all, and there was more of Kent's email in which he said, "Don't worry, I'm not one of these crazy tennis parents who takes it really seriously." And that's good. You definitely want to keep it fun and don't push him into it. Don't pressure him into it. You don't want to burn him out and make him hate it because you're pushing him to do it. So it's great you have the right attitude. As far as specific skills, the main two things that I focus on in my clinics are skills with the feet and skills with the hands. We want to try to get some kind of feeling for footwork in and see how the kids can do with different kind of movements with their feet. And the two main ones are just running, working on coordination with moving forwards, and also with shuffling, moving in a lateral direction. And so to warm up for each of my clinics, we do some running back and forth, and we also do some shuffling, where we face the net and then side shuffle, keeping their toes facing towards the net and not crossing their feet, but just having a nice smooth side shuffle in each direction, to the left and to the right. Because those are the two main ways you have to move in tennis. You have to be able to move side to side, recovering from each shot, and you have to be able to move up and back. some of, I actually have a more advanced group and a more beginner group, even at that age. And some of my advanced kids, I've even started working on backpedaling, on moving backwards. And I would be careful with that. Make sure you have a good feel for how good on his feet your son is. Don't try that unless he's doing a good job with his coordination with his feet. But that pretty much covers the feet. The other one, the big one, is eye-hand coordination. And with all my kids that age, I start off with taps. And taps means we get them turned to one side or the other, just saying, okay, this is your forehand side, this is your backhand side. Use one hand on this side, two hands on that side. And we simply have them turn to one side or the other, to their forehand or their backhand, and we ask them to just hold the racket right at their side, perpendicular to their body, and we have them just simply make contact. We don't ask them to swing or hit the ball, just simply ask them to make contact with the ball, and we explain to them, listen, this is where the ball should be hitting, on the strains, because you have to explain these kind of things to a four-year-old. And so we toss the ball to them underhand, it bounces once, and their goal is to tap it back to the coach. And so I would line them up 4, 6, or maybe 8 feet away from you, turn them to one side or the other, have them just hold the racket out at his side, and toss the ball underhand to him, and ask him to tap it back to you. And really, the racket face should just stay the same, just facing forwards, and he's just trying to make good contact. And then if he starts doing good at that, see if he can get a certain number in a row. You know, it's 5 in a row or 10 in a row back to you so that you can catch it without moving, without having to run for the ball. And so we'll do that with forehands and backhands. And then after that, we'll graduate to actually swinging. And that just consists of starting low and just swinging up, because they need to understand right away that the ball has to get over the net. Most tennis shots are an upward hit or an upward shot. And so we start right away being very clear with them. The racket has to start down and it has to finish high. And so combine that with the contact of the taps, got to hit the middle of the racket and start down below where the ball is and finish up high. And now you're working on a lot of different skills. After he gets good at that, you can work on adding the footwork in there too. So have him turn to the side and move over to a designated spot to hit a forehand. You can bounce the ball to him. He'll make his swing, and then have him shuffle back to where he started. And then he can move back and forth like that, moving out to the ball, making an upward swing, and then shuffling back. And now, I mean, you basically got somebody who knows how to hit ground strokes and move back and forth. And I've seen, using basically that plan right there, I've seen 4- and 5-year-olds advance pretty quickly. So hopefully that gives you some good ideas, Kent. And it's great that your son is enjoying it. It's great that he's getting into it already. I'm sure it's a lot of fun for you. All right, on to Kent's second question. He says, I'm entering my first tournament later this summer, and it's at a 3.0 level. What kind of atmosphere, experience, and vibe should I expect at a local tournament at that level? Any prep advice other than practice? Thanks a ton, as always, Kent. Well, Kent, it's great that you're entering your first tournament. I hope you enjoy it a lot. In general, my experience with tournaments is that it's a pretty fun atmosphere. You're always going to have your people at any level who take themselves too seriously, and they're just out there all business, and you know, they don't talk, they don't look you in the eye, and they're just out there just to win. Now, at the 3.0 level, believe it or not, you're going to find some people like that. But overall, the majority of people, you're going to find a good amount of camaraderie between everybody, because everybody there, you know, nobody signs up for a tournament at any level unless they've taken it somewhat seriously. And so these are people like you who are out there trying to get better. They're looking for advice and looking, maybe they're taking lessons. They're trying to improve their game, and they're working hard at it. They take it seriously. And so when you get a whole bunch of those kind of people together, you know, usually you have a some similar people, and they all have a good time playing together. And win or lose, usually you're gonna meet some new people and find some friends, some hitting partners that you can hopefully match up with in the future. But overall, you'll probably have a great experience with it. At least that's my experience. I've played tournaments in the Midwest and also now here on the East Coast, and it's pretty much the same in both places. I haven't had much personal experience in the South or on the West Coast. From what I've heard, in California, people take it very seriously there, and it's one of the biggest tennis communities as far as tournament players and serious competitors. But in the places where I've personally experienced tournament play, it's a really cool atmosphere. Again, you get a lot of people together who appreciate and work hard at the same thing, and there's usually a lot of camaraderie there. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. But on the other hand, again, you're going to find your people who just take it too seriously. Don't let that bother you. Just go out and have a good time and try to do your best. As far as actually preparing for it specifically, the number one thing you need to do is get there early. When you find out when your match is, I would get there an hour early, maybe an hour and a half early, and just kind of get familiar with the surroundings. Definitely take time, 45 minutes or a half an hour before your match, your actual match time, and get out there, maybe do a little bit of running, just jogging to get yourself warmed up. And if they have a backboard, a hitting wall, then use that to start warming your strokes up, hit some forehands, hit some backhands. Best case scenario would be to bring somebody with you who can help you warm up, some kind of practice partner, and make sure you hit a little bit of each stroke. Make sure you hit some forehand and backhand ground strokes, get a couple good rallies in, make sure you hit some volleys, make sure you hit some overheads, and hit serves to both sides and hit some returns on both sides. Make sure you cover a little bit of everything just to get warm and loose and build some confidence and get comfortable. If you get there 5 minutes before your match and you just go right out there cold and you only have 10 minutes to warm up, it's very hard to really get every stroke properly warmed up and hit at least a couple of each shot to feel somewhat confident in how you're doing in terms of actually hitting the ball. So get there an hour early, hour and a half early, bring a hitting partner. Hopefully you can find somebody to be there with you. And also check out if you can find your opponent, maybe he's playing a match before you do. Go and watch the other players and see what the competition is like. I'll give you a good idea of what you're up against. All right, Kent, hopefully that answers both your questions. Thanks very much for being a listener, and I appreciate your questions. Our next question on the Essential Tennis Podcast is a question from another listener in another country, which, again, I was very excited to see. This question comes from Dave R. in France. And Dave says, I've been playing tennis for almost 2 months now, and I can understand plenty of tennis terms, but there are still many terms which I don't understand as well. For example, what is spin? And as an example, topspin and slice. Could you explain in detail, please? Thank you very much. Well, sure, Dave. Thanks very much for the question. Spin is when you strike the tennis ball in such a way that you make it rotate in a certain direction. As you get started as a beginner, most of the spin that you impart on the ball and most of the spin that your opponent at your similar level hits to you is not going to be on purpose. It's going to be on accident. And so the ball will come to your side and you'll have a good idea of how you think it's going to bounce. And then the ball ends up bouncing in a completely different way than what you thought. And at a beginner level, most of those kind of shots are on accident. Either by hitting off center, by hitting the frame, or by swinging in such a way that, you know, it's kind of outside the boundaries of the way you normally swing, and it ends up putting some rotation on the ball. The ball is turning in a certain direction, and when the ball bounces, it causes the bounce to be in a different direction than normal. Normal meaning with no real rotation on the ball, it's just flying straight and flat. And so topspin and slice are the two main kinds of spin that you can put on a tennis ball. And I'll talk about both of those. First of all, what they are exactly. And then I'll also talk about how you do it and what it does to the ball. Topspin is rotation on the ball that travels towards your opponent's side of the court. So after you've made contact with the ball, topspin rotates end over end on a horizontal axis. It's rotating over the top from your side of the court to your opponent's side. So it's rotating over the top, rolling over towards the opposite side of the court. That is topspin, because as I described it a second ago, it is rotating from the bottom over around the top of the ball. And what that causes, when enough of it is put on the ball, topspin causes the ball to curve downwards. And so when a lot of topspin is put on the ball, it curves down into your opponent's side of the court. And also when it bounces, it causes the ball to kick upwards, higher than it normally would if you just struck a tennis ball straight. So topspin spins end over end towards your opponent's side. It causes the ball to curve downwards. And when the ball bounces, it bounces higher. It kicks upwards. And it also accelerates the ball as it bounces as well, as opposed to a shot that's hit with no spin. So that's topspin. Slice on a ground stroke is underspin. And that is spin that is rotating the opposite direction from topspin. So it's turning towards your side of the court. After the ball leaves your racket, backspin or slice goes from the bottom of the ball and turns towards your side instead of turning towards your opponent's side. So as it travels away from your racket, it's turning back towards you. And that's called slice. On a serve, slice is actually side spin. You're hitting the side of the ball. And so that causes the ball to curve to the right or to the left. So it's the same term. Slice is used both for ground strokes and for serves. But on a ground stroke, slice causes the ball to float, causes it to stay in the air a little bit longer and float a little bit longer. And when it hits the court on your opponent's side, it doesn't bounce as far. It causes the ball to sit back and even bounce backwards sometimes, as opposed to a ball that's hit flat. So on a ground stroke, slice rotates back towards your side of the court. It causes the ball to float in the air a little bit longer. And when it hits your opponent's side of the court, it causes it to not go forwards as much, or if you put enough slice on the ball, even come back towards the net after it bounces on your opponent's side of the court. And as I said, slice on a serve, same word, but this is different spin. Slice on a serve is side spin, and that causes the ball to rotate on a vertical axis from right to left or left to right, depending on if you're right-handed or left-handed. The ball is going to spin the opposite direction, and that causes the ball to curve in the air back and forth from right to left or from left to right. So those are your different kinds of spin. And they're used for different things. A topspin shot on ground strokes, topspin is used to hit aggressively. And the reason for that is when you hit the ball, if you can make it curve downwards, that means you can gain consistency. When you hit a topspin ground stroke, the ball makes an arc in the air. It gets hit upwards to clear the net, and then it curves back downwards into the court. And that means if you can add topspin to your ground strokes, you can hit more aggressively, you can hit at a faster pace, and still keep the ball in play because the spin pulls it back into the court. Not only does it make it more consistent because of the curve in the shot, but as I said before, when the ball bounces, it kicks up higher. That spin hits the court and makes the ball bounce higher. And so not only is it more consistent, but it actually makes it a tougher shot for your opponent to return. So as far as ground strokes are concerned, topspin is kind of the holy grail of strokes. If you can hit with topspin and know how to control it, you know, if you can do it correctly and reliably, then you can consistently attack and hit aggressively while maintaining a high level of consistency. And that's huge. If you can hit both aggressively and consistently, that's huge. That's your ultimate goal on your ground strokes. And that's a big reason why the modern game is so much faster. As the rackets have gotten a little bit bigger and easier to swing, the strokes were easier to hit more with more aggression. It was easier to hit the ball at a faster pace. And so players learned to use topspin to keep the ball in play. And now every player on tour is hitting with a lot of topspin because it allows them to hit the ball hard and still keep it in play. Now slice is the opposite. It makes the ball float. And so you don't usually want to hit slice on a ground stroke to attack because it makes the ball carry farther. So if you hit the ball hard and make it carry far, chances of it going out are greater as opposed to topspin, which makes the ball curve down. So usually a slice shot from the baseline or off the bounce, off a ground stroke, is used for defense. When you're on the run and barely get to the ball, usually the player will hit with an open face and hit backspin because it's easier to put the ball in play. It's a simpler stroke. It's less aggressive of a stroke. And so it's a little more consistent in general. If you need to just get the ball in play and you're not concerned about hitting it hard, slice is usually a more consistent play. Slice is also used for touch. When you see players hit drop shots, and hopefully you guys out there have been watching the French Open, on red clay you see a lot of drop shots hit. Those are hit with slice, with backspin. By opening the face and by dropping the racket downwards, you can make the ball spin backwards, and that allows you to hit softer with more touch and drop it softly over the net and short into your opponent's side of the court. That's what slice is for, is to either hit defensively or to hit with touch, as opposed to topspin, which is used for hitting aggressively and swinging hard. So that's basically it, Dave. I could spend a whole nother segment on talking about how to use spin with serves specifically as well, and it's kind of close to the same thing as from the baseline, but not quite. Hopefully that answers your question. Thanks very much for writing to me from France. Really cool to hear from you. And good luck with your tennis. Hopefully that helps your understanding. Okay, lastly for today, we have two good questions from John T. John's first question is just an excellent question and something that beginner and intermediate players need to understand and is absolutely essential to becoming a higher level player. John asks, why is a long stroke better than a short one? My instinct always told me that a compact stroke would be less prone to errors because less can go wrong. However, my personal experience has shown that the longer stroke is indeed better for me, but I just don't really understand why. Just curious if you could provide some insight. Specifically, this is in regards to my semi-Western forehand. Well, John, great question. And this is extremely important for you guys to understand. And this pertains to mostly ground strokes and serves and overheads, anything where you're taking, where you're trying to add pace to the ball. This doesn't pertain so much to volleys and touch shots, but it is the same. It's the same same thing for those shots as well. But it doesn't pertain quite as much as to our shots where we're trying to generate pace on the ball. Here is why a long swing is important, John. Basically, the longer your swing is, and another way of putting that is in kind of a physical fitness term, which is range of motion. The more range of motion we have, the more length of swing we have, the more potential for power and spin we have. The longer your swing is, the easier it is to accelerate the racket. And the more you're able to accelerate the racket, the more potential you have to increase the speed of the ball and the spin that you put on the ball. And so just in terms of improving as a player, if you want your ground strokes to be more powerful, if you want them to have more spin, if you want your serve to be more powerful and for it to have more spin, you have to increase your range of motion. Now, the only way to have a longer swing, the only way to have a long range of motion, is to be relaxed. If your muscles are tight, that restricts your swing. And I see so many players at the 3.0 level, at the 3.5 level, and below, that have tight, tense swings. And they're working so hard to hit the ball, but they're getting almost no result out of it. They have short ground strokes, they have a short serve, and they're working hard, but the results aren't that great. And as long as your body is tight and tense, and as long as your strokes are short and quick, you're going to be stuck. You will only be able to make it to a certain level using short swings, because you just simply cannot generate the amount of acceleration on the racket that's needed to move up in level if you keep your swings short and tight. And so keeping your muscles relaxed as you hit is extremely important. And as I get new students, that's oftentimes one of the first things that we work on, even if I don't tell them overtly to relax, which oftentimes I do. One of the first things we usually work on, me and my students, when it's an intermediate or a beginner level player, is getting a longer swing path on their ground strokes. Because most intermediate and beginner level players are playing with a very short swing, relatively speaking. And oftentimes what I tell people is your potential for power is speed times length in your swing. The longer your swing is, and the faster you move your racket, the more power you're going to have. And when you have a short, compact swing, you don't have that potential anymore. Not only that, but believe it or not, John, having a longer swing will make you more accurate. And that's because your racket stays along its path for a longer period of time. When you try to hit the ball from the ground, with a ground stroke, when you try to hit the ball with a short, compact swing, your racket's only moving for a short period of time, relatively speaking. And so you have to line that little swing up just right with the ball to make it go to a certain place, whether it be width or height or depth. When you have a long swing, you can move your racket along the path that you want the ball to travel across for a longer period of time. And so you have a greater chance for success when your racket is moving across that path for a longer period of time. So that's a huge reason for you to have a longer swing. You can add more power to your game. You can add more spin to your game. You can direct the ball more easily. And the last point I want to make is as you relax more and lengthen your swing more, the less chance you're going to have of injuring yourself. Most tennis injuries, Most tennis injuries in the upper part of the body come from poor technique, and usually that poor technique comes from some kind of tension in the stroke. A lot of people have elbow problems and forearm problems stemming from their tennis play, and in my experience, a very high percentage of those come from having a short, compact swing, trying to hit the ball hard with a short swing. That puts so much strain on your body. When you're trying to hit the ball with pace and with spin, with a short swing, you have to try exponentially harder than when you have a long, relaxed swing. The longer swing is going to generate more result, more power and more spin with less effort because your muscles are more relaxed and the length of swing is going to add more momentum to the ball. And so it's less strain on your body. Your muscles don't have to work as hard, and you get a better result. So hopefully all of those reasons are good enough for you to and it sounds like you're already convinced anyway. But hopefully all of you people out there listening who think maybe hitting shorter is better. It's definitely not true. A longer swing on your ground strokes, on your serve, on your overhead, any stroke where you're trying to generate pace and spin, a long, relaxed swing is going to work better. And I always move my students towards having a longer swing. Again, the only exception to that is volleys. Volleys should be a compact motion because you have much less time to react to the ball. Now, you should still be relaxed. You should not be tight and tense, but the actual movement of the racket is much, much less because we're not trying to add power to the ball. We're not trying to add spin to the ball. We're simply trying to direct it towards our target. So you're going to take the pace on the ball that's already that's coming towards you, that your opponent has put on the shot that's headed towards you, and we're simply trying to redirect it towards our objective. So, John, hopefully that is enough detail for you to understand why. And it's great that you have already seen that you will be more successful with a longer swing. If you get out there and purposefully try to lengthen your ground strokes and relax your body, you will see more results. And if the ball goes out, it's not because you lengthened your swing. You have to make a technique change to keep it in play. But stay long and relaxed. It will make you a better player. John's second question, and this is very closely related to the question I answered from Steve. He says, how do I get power into volleys? I feel I can place my volleys fine, but I would like to be able to put away head-height volleys immediately using power in addition to placement. Incidentally, I use a continental grip for all volleys. That's great, John, that you're already using a continental grip for both sides. I actually went over this more in depth than I wanted to with Steve's question. I wanted to make these two separate things. However, as you heard when I answered Steve's question, I want you to use more so your body and your shoulder to add pace to the ball. If you're already successful in placing the ball, if you can pick a target on the court and hit it a high percentage of the time, just placing it and not adding pace to the shot, then you're probably ready to start adding a little more strength. And don't feel like when you get a high volley, it necessarily has to be put away immediately. Now, the exception to that would be if you are close to the net and it is indeed head high, then yes, I want you to put those away. You shouldn't be messing around with just trying to place it back and forth at that point. If you're that close and the ball is that high, I do want you to put it away. So if you're already successful placing the ball and the ball is that high and you are that close, you can start using your hand and your forearm a little more to accelerate the racket. And so as you rotate forwards with your body, as you transfer your motion, your momentum of your body forwards with your legs and your feet, use that in conjunction with using your hand to accelerate the racket head a little more. This is going to be riskier because, as I discussed before, your racket face is now changing directions. It's going to be facing different ways, and so you're going to have to time this correctly. But if you're having no problem placing your volleys that you hit with control now, you can probably start working on this. Use your hand a little more to accelerate the racket, as well as using your body to transfer forwards and to rotate towards your target, and you should be able to add more pace to the ball. Also, as I talked about with Steve, make sure that as you do this, you close your racket face more. A volley that's hit from below the level of the net has to be made contact with an open face to make sure it gets over to the other side. If you're making contact high and trying to be aggressive, you have to close the face. If you hit aggressively with an open face, the ball will go out. And so as you hit harder with your volleys, as you accelerate a little more, close your face more at contact to make sure the ball is hit directly into your opponent's side of the court. So you're trying to close your face so that it's facing at your target, as opposed to a low volley or a volley hit farther back in the court where you're trying to open your face and hit the ball up and drop it on your target. When you're closer and the ball is higher, you're trying to close your face. Your racket face is actually facing directly at where you're trying to hit. And that's the advantage of being close to the net. You can hit at your target instead of lifting the ball and trying to drop it on your target with a ground stroke or with a low volley or a volley farther away. Now you can close your face, face your strains towards where you're actually trying to hit, and now you can hit aggressively at your target, directly into your opponent's side of the court. That's how you hit a more aggressive volley and keep it in play. John, hopefully that answers your question. Thanks very much for taking the time to write, and I appreciate you being a listener. Okay, everybody, that brings our time for this week to an end. I can't believe how fast the time goes by. I've probably been at the computer here for about an hour and a half now, and the podcast this week is going to be almost an hour in length. And all of these are great questions. You guys are asking great questions, and hopefully this information I'm getting out is going to help a lot of different people. The people who are taking time to write questions, you don't understand how many people you're probably helping out there who have similar problems and are wondering similar things about their tennis game. So by asking those questions, you're indirectly helping other people as well. But I enjoy doing this a great deal. The time really flies by every week. Thanks, everybody who's been listening. And if you've listened all the way through this podcast, thanks so much for spending your time with me. Please make sure you get to visit EssentialTennis.com. And also, if you have a couple minutes, I'd really appreciate any of you who could head on over to the iTunes Music Store. And if this podcast has helped you, please take the time to leave me a comment. Let's get the Essential Tennis Podcast up to number one on iTunes. That would be outstanding. All right, well, that does it for episode number 9. Thank you very much, everybody, again. And I'll look forward to recording next week's podcast. Everybody, take care and good luck with your tennis.